A time of contradictions. Please consider the following absurdity. Bill Clinton is, if you believe any investigations, including various trials in the Star Report, Bill Clinton is a notorious and voracious sex criminal. Compared to what Bill has been accused of, therefore, Trump is a Boy Scout. And yet, if you believe Hillary, despite her being considered Bill's attack dog and accuser, discreditor, she spent an entire weekend thinking about the implications of Trump's statements. Huh? Somehow, typical leftism with its moral agnosticism, that means, to me, the fact that it doesn't really believe in anything other than its own power and righteousness, has crept into the presidential election like a runaway train. According to far leftism, things matter when someone on the left complains, usually after a long and tortured explanation that really makes no sense in the larger picture. For example, Black Lives Matter, but only when they are getting arrested. Otherwise, they can worry about their own crime, unsafe neighborhoods, broken schools, random shootings, and other fatherless dysfunctions. They're on their own for everything. Trump is laboring to get himself over the hill and trying to carry an unwilling NP with him. The bizarre, effete, meaning effeminate and entirely disconnected Republican Party believes they will survive abandoning their nominee in the midst of a race and then get kudos for resistance. Not likely. Instead, they've become a laughingstock well on their way to extinction. Future generations of poli-sci students will gasp at their inane and conceited self-regard, their bizarre self-love. They lead while they're salt of the earth, and lead in quotations, while their salt of the earth followers get picked off one by one. Meanwhile, Trump navel gazes, wasting all his time, huffing and puffing about his reputation. Donald, at this point, just go for the grand slam. Destroy Hillary in the next debate. This race, in fact, is a testimony to the incipient lawlessness of true far leftism. Can the U.S. survive its inevitable descent into socialism that we see all around us already? No, because no other country ever did either. At best, the old America can survive in pockets as the society itself degenerates into post-biblical, anti-constitution, anti-law, and anti-Christian apocalypse, while the world itself, ignored then by America, burns on its axis. Good morning, Kelly here. And I've been thinking about this. So I had a friend call me up yesterday, and I realized one of the reasons that he called me, we went out to lunch, was that, and I don't think he gets up this early, tells me he gets up with the sun, but he, I think one of the reasons that he wanted to get together was he enjoyed what I had talked about yesterday. He didn't directly say that, but kind of during the lunch, he had mentioned it. And yesterday we had talked about this this weird thing that's going on. I mean, you know, the left is like this really bizarre church, do as I say, not as I do church. And has all the markings of a cult, you know. The higher up you get, the more cult-like the individuals are. But I think that what's going on right now, this thing with Trump is, he said it was because Trump is the result of all the Republicans getting voted into the House and Senate and not keeping their word, not abolishing Obamacare. I tend to think of it as a party that was at one time distinguished by the fact that there was a large number of people in it that were Christian, who were expressing their beliefs through their politics. And as time goes on, and especially as the leftism, as the Marxism, whatever you want to call it, comes into the society, the fact is that it becomes more and more perilous to stand up for what you believe. And so the right doesn't do that. The people at the top of the party, the Mitch McConnells and Paul Ryans, I don't know what they believe. I just know what they do politically, and it is they try to be on the safe side. What, and the sad thing about that is that there was a tremendous amount of energy in the GOP and calling for reform, calling for a cutback on the amount we were spending, ultra-liberal policies, many of the mistakes from the George Bush era, George W. Bush era period forward, in which we got trapped in foreign wars that were totally avoidable. And, you know, really, George W. Bush is not a real conservative person. And he laid the foundation for the destruction of the party through the Iraq War and also through his deficit spending. And, you know, there was a lot of energy, and the GOP foolishly allowed that energy to just siphon itself off as people came to understand that there was no conservative movement. No conservative leadership, I should say, in Washington to fight back. And so now you've got what almost seems inevitable and unprecedented: three Democrat parties in a elections, presidential wins in a row at the highest level. And, you know, this country is essentially conservative, more than probably any country in the world, and yet we've kind of been walked away from that. And you've got this, what I find kind of interesting is that you have got this this kind of interesting and seductive, and in my opinion totally sinister campaign along the lines of political correctness, in which a small group of people begin to assert this is true and the opposition to it is false. It is spread out in the society, and pretty soon all of the people that disagree with it are trapped like in the La Brea tar pits. You know, they're just kind of like up to their waist in quicksand, and they're, you know, whether they're fighting or not, they're sinking. And you've got then this PC movement kind of transitions through the court system and everything, and through social pressure and legal, the law, the country becomes more and more progressive, more and more liberal. And you get to the point where people don't see the difference anymore between, and they don't understand why the forefathers, the foremothers, the people that came before them ever resisted gay marriage and stuff like this. Gay marriage to me is just an emblem. There's not a lot of necessarily people that go and have a gay marriage. But to use the law to expand the franchise in a direction that nobody in history ever envisioned is kind of breathtaking, you know. But so there's been a popular, the media is launching a popular coup after Trump, but that's after the media itself was infiltrated by leftism, and the Democratic Party was converted to leftism. It had, you know, it wasn't that long ago that the Democratic Party is what, you know, was where the pretty much the GOP is right now. So, but there are consequences to all of this stuff. It's going to affect your life. One of the weird things too that I find is people no longer talk about the right to have a functioning economy. And so they don't worry about a functioning economy. They're more interested in whatever their beliefs are and whatever type of, you know, what has happened, I think, is the country itself has kind of been seduced by this this type of leftism that has a messianic end. This we're going to save the world through fighting global warming. We're going to make the world better through socialism, all these things. And the end result is a complete train wreck because all the cliches and all the propaganda, you're left with the same old socialism. So anyway, 616 Kelly O'Connell. And sorry the station was off the air this morning, but we're back and better than ever. Even have a tech guy in the waiting in the wings here to tackle this unwieldy machine. 616, my old buddy Rob. 616, we'll be right back. Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. Listening to Dave Brubeck this week. Time Out, one of the greatest jazz albums of all times. Be right back. 523, 1450 on AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. And we're going to come back and pick it up. Okay, WikiLeaks has been perpetually in the news for the last few months, and the question is there any quid pro quo between what Hillary did in the foundation and anybody else that paid to talk to her on an average of $2 million a shot? Journalists say yes. The State Department and FBI, of course, say no, but here's a little clip from Fox News.
About this story and other top political news with syndicated columnist Charles Krauthammer. He is in Washington tonight. Charles, I want to take you back to Catherine's story, and that is the FBI documents that came out and show what is alleged to be this quid pro quo between Undersecretary of State Patrick Kennedy and this FBI official who is talking about the emails and classification. Your sense of that story and its impact?
Well, there are so many ironies here. The first is that this is probably normal procedure inside any administration, inside a bureaucracy, trading off favors, trading off probably shady maneuvers. But the problem is this. The charge that Republicans, Trump in particular, are making against Hillary Clinton is precisely that she represents business as usual. You can defend Clinton and say, well, this goes on all the time. But that's the point. They are trying to wipe away this kind of culture of corruption. It is hard to deny that there's a quid pro quo, or at least one was proposed, when the phrase quid pro quo is used to describe the transaction in the documents. So, look, this is the camera in the sausage factory. I don't think that we should be shocked that this happens in the bureaucracy, but once you see it in black and white and you hear the charge that Clinton represents business as usual and it's a corrupt business as usual, that I think accentuates the charge and makes it a very serious one.
Charles, on the emails, you know, the campaign comes back and says, we don't know if they're accurate or not. This is hacked by Russia and putting him out there. But the FBI documents, in there are other things besides this Patrick Kennedy situation. For example, the FBI in interviews of FBI officials and service members explained that Clinton's treatment of diplomatic service security agents on her protective detail was so contemptuous that many of them sought reassignment or employment elsewhere. Prior to Clinton's tenure, it goes on to say, being an agent of the Secretary of State's protective detail was seen as an honor and privilege reserved for senior agents. However, by the end of Clinton's tenure, it was staffed largely with new agents because it was difficult to find senior agents willing to work for her. That's the FBI documents, not the emails. And right. I'm just wondering how you think this all plays politically in a situation where Donald Trump is clearly getting bombarded on the allegations by all of these women.
Look, there are shelves in libraries groaning with tomes describing the personal unpleasantness of Hillary Clinton. This is another piece of that evidence. And because it reinforces the pre-existing impression of somebody who is not pleasant, is arrogant, and treats subordinates with disrespect, it makes the case that when she says that she speaks for the middle class, for the suffering and the poor, and of course the children, you might want to be suspicious about that claim. But it's nothing new. It adds to the weight of evidence. And when it has the FBI's signature on it, that I think is also significant.
Well, you know, the fact of the matter is that the GOP let the country down. And I was having lunch with this friend of mine yesterday. He said because the GOP didn't do what they were supposed to do, it rose up a group of people that were highly critical and skeptical of the GOP, and they wanted somebody new, and the new person was Donald Trump. I don't really blame Trump. I think that, you know, there's this idea of the Peter principle, people rise to the level of their competence. He may not be able to get beyond defending himself all the time, which is a complete waste of time. I mean, look at Reagan. Reagan never bothered to defend himself. He just laughed at the criticism. I guess you can't really laugh at sex assault charges, but I think what Trump should do, and not that he listens to anybody, apparently, is get up and say the first couple of sex assault charges that have been directed towards me, we investigated them and people came out of the woodwork, and these women have turned out to be liars. I'm not going to pay any more attention to this. The problems of the country are too big. Forget attacking Paul Ryan. He's a complete milquetoast. Go forward with your campaign. Go after Hillary. Expose Hillary. Every moment that he's up there not exposing Hillary's wild life of lying and deception and just graft, he's missing a chance to win the race. I don't think it's too late to win it, but he needs a walk-off grand slam, ninth inning in the World Series, and chances are against that. I think he's down in the polls 11 points, although that will be adjusted after the debate. I think he's going to clean her clock again, but does it matter if you lose by 2 points or 20? You know, we'll take a break. 627 AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450. I am going to get into the clip that I didn't play yesterday because I was a little bit distracted, but it's on basically cultural Marxism that took the place of this plan in original Marxism, in which all of the workers in the world would revolt and take over and fight against capitalism and create a utopian communist paradise. That idea is no longer accepted by Marxists, and now it is this internal infection of socialism, political correctness, whatever you want to call it. We'll be right back. All right, so I got a lot of questions for you here. What happens to the Republican Party if Trump loses? Seriously, because it looks like the odds are right now he's going to lose. Whoever's fault it is, what's going to happen to the party? What is my guess? I think the party crashes and burns, and I don't think you're going to be able to get away from the fact that the House and the Senate are going to suffer. And I think at some point the loss of Trump falls on the party because the party walked away from him. The party was, and this is this thing that Republicans and conservatives do all the time. They try to go kind of halfway to where the left is to show that they're meaningful, you know, deep thinking people that care about the right thing. And so whatever it is with John McCain with campaign finance reform, a thousand other examples out there lead me to the conclusion that the GOP does not understand politics and does not understand or refuses to accept leftism. Leftism is about power, and therefore you can't go halfway to power and find success. You know, you could switch parties and focus on something else, but this idea that your party has a nominee process, an individual comes in from the outside, goes through it and wins, and then you're not going to support him because of A, B, or C, that doesn't solve problems down the road. It creates them, because then there is a lack of indifference at the highest levels because of all these people who think that they're better than Trump, the Paul Ryans, even though he ran on a presidential ticket and was rejected, Mitch McConnell, all of these, you know, McCain's and the other people that said that they were going to bail off of his ticket. There is no place for the solo person in a party. You know, you can become a independent like Bernie Sanders and see where that got him. So all of these people who claim to be torn up by conscience, who are transparently only interested in themselves, have made the party a laughingstock. The Democratic Party would never waste its time with these kind of, chest beating and navel gazing. So what's going to happen to the party? I think the party is going to have a hard time surviving at the same level as the Democrats. The Democrats are going to take their three terms in a row. They're going to pack the Supreme Court, which is the real big deal here. But it's going to be a continual misuse of the government. And Hillary is not going to stop putting her billions together. $100 billion is what they think that Clintons have right now. And they're going to continue to pile on to that. What's going to happen is we're living in basically a post-legal age, a post-constitutional age. So it's going to matter less and less when people do things outside of the Constitution, whether in a court or outside of a court. There'll be the trappings. There'll be the pretending that they're following the Constitution. But you're going to see laws that are passed, in my opinion, against free speech, probably against talk radio, and the internet is going to be trimmed back. That's my guess. And Christian people, I mean, it's not a coincidence that they don't bring Christians over from the Middle East, that they instead bring as many Muslims over as possible. What would be the logical reason for bringing as many unconverted Muslims that have no exposure whatsoever to democracy? What would be their purpose in doing that? My opinion, that this is based on my study of leftism and socialism, Marxism, progressivism, whatever you want to call it, is they want revolution. They want to, you know, it's like a garden. At the end of the season, the garden dies. You turn the soil over. You throw the stuff on the compost heap. You turn it over. That's how they see this country. This country is a problem to them. Now, there's the headline on the Drudge Report, Hijab for Hillary. Hijab. Record 65 million non-English speakers in the United States, Arabic fastest growing language. So what does that mean? So all of these people who come over are going to be default Democrats because they understand who brought them over here. So you increase Syrians alone by 500%. Now, Angela Merkel, the leader of Germany, is on the verge of losing her position because of the disaster that bringing a million Syrians in has caused. Basically a million Muslims. Because they really don't know. When people come over here, they don't really know what country they came from a lot of times. Believe it or not. Because people relocate. But the upshot is that the media has become a wing of the Democratic Party. What's my proof of that? Politico's chief political correspondent is named Glenn Thrush, who must have a bird brain because he identifies himself as a hack for John Podesta, who's the head of the Clinton Party. Now, if you do not have an independent press, you cannot have a free society because it's the press that is supposed to report on the facts, popular or not, and then let the people decide what's happening in the country. So you've got Glenn Thrush sending an article to John Podesta, the head of the Clinton campaign. And if you've ever seen John Podesta, he looks like an absolute nerd. He's not a nerd for Jesus. He's a nerd for Marx. And just a complete party animal, 100% for the party, 100% for everything else. So he gets sent this article this guy's writing, Glenn Thrush, and Politico was already outed as having strong sympathies to the Democratic Party. So he sends this article and says, is there anything you want me to change? I mean, can you believe that, right? But it's no big deal, of course. The exchange between Thrush and Podesta, and this is from Breitbart, was revealed by WikiLeaks. In the email, Thrush sends several paragraphs about Hillary's fundraising operation and leads into the article by admitting, quote, because I have become a hack, I will send you the whole section that pertains to you. After asking Podesta not to share or tell anyone I did this, Thrush seeks Podesta's approval on the article by saying, tell me if I blanked up anything. So, you've got the media working directly for, and that's not the only case. I mean, there is journalist after journalist. You can see it on TV. Case after case, these people are transparently working. So when we move into socialism, what's the country going to be like? Just curious. Just slightly curious, of course. Because it's not going to be like it is now. I'm sure you realize that. So we'll take a little break here. I'm going to get back and I'll play that article that people were asking about yesterday because I guess it kind of sounded promising. But I want to show you, I wanted to share with you what it meant to have a socialist or a Marxist country means that the media is... doesn't do reporting, it's a propagandizing unit. It's very scary because any story that they don't want to get out, like the fact that all of these claims against Trump are made up, doesn't get out. And so people are propagandized and shaped into anything that the party wants. If you stand out, you're nailed down. You're pounded down like a nail that's sticking out of a floorboard. 641 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1455, 23, 1450. We'll be right back. All right, there's this interesting little article that's out there that says poll millennials clueless to dark history of communism. One of the interesting things that's put out there, and I've got something I had mentioned to you before. By the way, this book called From Under the Rubble. It was written by a friends of Alexander Solzhenitsyn, and Solzhenitsyn himself had put in stuff into this book. But there was a guy that had written some stuff, and these people had lived through socialism and communism. And I feel a burden to try to explain this stuff. At the same time, I know that you've got to spend some time and really concentrate on it, because it's so much of socialism doesn't make sense. A permanent society in which, for example, is the theory, one of the theories, people work if they choose to. If they choose not to, for whatever reason, then they're supposed to be supported by everybody else. That alone doesn't work. The reason it doesn't work is because of human nature. People resist that because of human nature, but because communism or Marxism doesn't accept human nature, that point eludes them. Now, this is from Market Watch. Millennials desperately need to bone up on the history of communism. And 80% of baby boomers and 91% of the elderly agree with the statement that communism was and is still a problem. Millennials, only 55% of it. So they talk about entitlement society, the idea that people owe you something. If you can turn that into a way of life, that would be great, wouldn't it? But I'd like to throw one thing out for you. As we were talking about how things used to be as opposed to how they are now, there was a time when people really didn't feel that entitled, believe it or not. And those people, those days were a lot happier, because if people had something, usually they earned it. Or even if they were given something, they had more of a sense of, I've been given this. And there were spoiled brats out there and everything, and there were bums who refused to work. But overall, it was a happy time, happier time, I should say, because there was the sense that when you were raised up in your family, you got to 18, whatever, the world was in front of you, you joined the military, as my friend Rob did, to help pay for his education. But also to you know, a lot of people that join the military, if you talk to them, are patriotic, and it's a way for them to express that. But people had a sense that if you had something, you had it because you went out and worked. If you work for something and get it, it feels better than being given it. That's just a fact of psychology and, as I said, human nature. We'll take a break here. I'm going to come back and play that clip for you, General Boykin's little introduction to Marxism in society, only because people really reacted to that. They seemed to be interested in it yesterday. So if you understand that all of these so-called journalists are in the tank, it doesn't change the impression that stories make, probably on the first impression, but it takes a certain amount of the sting away to know that the New York Times has been involved in putting out these stories that Trump had groped women. Now that it's been disproved, are they putting that out? No. They're putting out a story on Melania Trump defending her husband's attack on Bill Clinton's past. They're asking for it, and also that Melania says her husband didn't do it. I think that's just pathetic. Anyway, here's your Here's your clip from General Boykin on Marxism in America.
We hear a lot about Marxism and socialism, and there are those, particularly in the media, who would say that we should tone down our rhetoric about socialism because we're not moving to socialism. Well, the reality is, I'm a special forces officer. I'm a Green Beret, and I've studied Marxist insurgency. It was part of my training. And the things that I know that have been done in every Marxist insurgency are being done in America today. The first thing that has happened when people like Fidel Castro have moved their societies towards Marxism is they've nationalized major sectors of the economy. Folks, that's what the bailouts were, nationalizing major sectors of the economy. The second thing they've done is they've redistributed wealth. We've heard enough about the redistribution of wealth. And in fact, the man that was appointed to handle Medicaid and Medicare after he was seated in the office actually stood up and said publicly that health care was nothing but a redistribution of wealth. The third thing that they do is they discredit their opposition. Now, I've never been so angry with my government as when a Department of Homeland Security memorandum went around to law enforcement all over the country, saying that the future threats to America were right-wing Christian groups, pro-life groups, Second Amendment groups, and returning veterans. I'm still angry about that. But it never said Islamic terrorist. That's discrediting the opposition, the very groups that would stand up and protest the things that they see happening in our country. The fourth thing that has been done in the model is censorship. Now, it's kind of irrelevant with regards to the media because most of the mainstream media is already on the left and is already very much in favor of the things that we see happening in America. But the hate crimes legislation that has been passed is actually targeted at pastors. It's targeted at pastors so that they don't get up in the pulpit and talk about things like homosexuality and same-sex marriage, or about the realities of Islam and the danger that Islam presents to America. The hate crimes legislation is meant to suppress them, to censor them, which is part of the Marxist model. The next thing that was done in every society was that gun ownership had to be controlled. We hold the Second Amendment to be very important to us as Americans, the right to bear arms. But in a Marxist movement, you have to control that gun ownership. I don't know if you've seen it, but there has been a decree by the administration, by the president and the secretary of state, saying that our president will sign the United Nations Small Arms Treaty, which is about how we will buy, sell, and control individual private weapons. Folks, that means the United Nations, an international body, will decide how you and I, as Americans, can buy and sell our weapons, how we control those weapons, who's authorized to have those weapons, and where they are. This is a dangerous trend. And the final thing that is done in the Marxist model is societies like Cuba, like Venezuela today, like Russia under Stalin, or China under Mao Zedong. Things they have done, the final thing has been actually to develop a constabulary force, a force that can control the population. You say, well, we don't have that. Well, let me remind you that prior to the election, the president stood up and said that if elected, he would have a national civilian security force that would be as large as and as well equipped as the United States military. For what? Remember, Hitler had the brown shirts. And in the Night of the Long Knives, even Hitler got scared of the brown shirts and killed thousands of them. Well, so you say, are there any signs that that's actually happened? The truth is, yes. If you read the health care legislation, which, by the way, no one in Washington has read, but if you read the health care legislation, it's actually in the health care legislation. There are paragraphs in the healthcare legislation that talk about the commissioning of officers in time of a national crisis to work directly for the president. It's laying the groundwork for a constabulary force that will control the population in America. You need to understand this is happening in America, and it fits the model that societies have that have been used when societies move to Marxism. It should be a matter of great concern. Find out more about it. Look at what's happening around you, and then get out and do something to help stop this. Use the constitutional tools that our founding fathers gave us. Let your congressman know how you feel about this. Be a pain in their neck by constantly emailing and calling them.
Probably too late for that, folks. But anyway, that was a little bit from General Boykin. A few clips. We've got Dr. McMillan is going to come on at 7 o'clock. Again, I offered him the opportunity to come back and respond to some of the scurrilous charges that are coming out of these East Coast ads. But to let you know, it's become obvious that the accusers of Donald Trump are lying, but it's probably too late, you know. And nobody's carrying the news that they're lying, which is sad. But there's an article in McClatchy in which the writer says there are way too many coincidences in the assault stories on Trump. And then just to let you know, I'm going to be focusing, I guess, this week on Marxism because people have an interest in that. But I'll take you out here at this point on AM Las Cruces, AM 1450 with some more Dave Brubeck. 523-1450 to call in. We'll be right back. Well, good morning, 7:06, and we've got Terry McMillan here, and I asked Dr. McMillan. I called him up and had a conversation with him about the ads that were playing that really bothered me when I listened to them because I just so happened to have a little bit of inside information on one of the cases that was mentioned having to do with the pacemakers. But I offered Dr. McMillan a chance to come on and respond to those ads. Once again, the ads are coming out of the East Coast. And Dr. McMillan, what do we know about the people that paid for these East Coast ads?
Good morning, Kelly.
And good morning to you.
The PAC, Patriot Majority, that's paying for these ads, and they identify themselves at the end of the ads. And you'll find there are a number of them that are aimed at certain representatives and senators around the state. But this is all big union money for the most part. Teachers unions, state employee unions, these are big contributors to this particular political action committee. I sometimes wonder how some of the good people that I know, good teachers and employees of state government and city government, are understanding that some of their union dues go to these types of political attack ads. And if they had that understanding, would they really approve? And I understand that many might and haven't supported me in my bid to be a state representative and remain a state representative. But I often wonder if they knew that some of their dues are taken and spent on this type of personal destruction politics. I mean, most of this money emanates from unions on the East Coast. It's interesting to me. I recently found out that Patriot Majority New Mexico got a $100,000 contribution from former Mayor Bloomberg of New York City,
who's worth something like somewhere between $20 and $30 billion.
He's a multiple billionaire, and I don't know anything about that, but certainly $100,000 is little to him. And the aim is clearly in spreading this money around to be used to personally destroy local politicians.
And we do have a call. Thanks for the call, the Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Reed. Hey, I just wanted to mention something that Terry had said regarding unions. So just to let you guys know, political donations do not come out of union dues. In order to make a political donation, you need to actually make that a separate donation. So union dues do not contribute to political campaigns. So that is not a true fact.
I appreciate that. And you may be correct. I'm not in a position necessarily to dispute that, although part of the debate over right-to-work legislation does go to the argument that workers who join a union in order to get a particular job, that their union dues are used for political purposes. Now, I have heard it, the argument that you're making as well. And so I accept you may be right.
Reed, let me hold on.
2515 machinist.
Reed, can you hear me? Hold on just a second. I've just Googled this. I'm not an expert on this, but there's a Forbes article that comes up November 3rd, 2014. So a year and a half ago, big political spending by unions paid with dues. Are you sure that dues never the dues that are paid into unions are never used in ads, political ads?
Dues money does not pay for political contributions. So in order to make a political contribution, you have to include a separate check that will go to your international, and that will be used for political money. But at no time are dues taken out to pay for political ads. It just doesn't happen.
Okay, well, and we'll accept that, and I believe that that's what you believe is true, and it may in fact be the truth. I guess what I should say then is I wonder if those teachers and others who make political contributions of the type that you're alluding to actually are aware of the type of political and personal attack ads that their contributions are used to make. So at least we could agree about that.
Yeah, unfortunately, unions as a whole have to decide who's pro-union and who is not pro-union. So unfortunately, just because you're a union member, the majority of the interest of the union is, what's represented with the union as opposed to,
Reed,
individual.
I hear you, Reed. Let me ask you something. Is that that's a bylaw? Is that state? Is it national? Is it national law? Is it state law? What are you referring to when you say that that doesn't happen?
No, that's a national law, international law.
But is it in it's a union? If it's an international law, is it an international standard for unions that they don't spend money on ads, political ads?
I'm not saying that they don't spend money on ads. What I'm saying is your dues that you pay monthly or however you pay them do not go to political contributions.
Okay, but but somebody could give like their monthly due and then say I'd like to give an extra $20 for ads or what? How does that happen?
Exactly. There's a pot of money for political donations, and if you want to make a donation, then you put it in the envelope, you send it up the line to the international or the local, and they get it to who needs to have it, but it doesn't have to do with your dues. It's completely separate.
Well, let me ask you this, Reed. And I appreciate the call. But let me ask you this personally. If you made a personal political contribution of the type that you describe, how would you feel about it being used for these types of extreme destruction tactics?
Yeah, I'm definitely not a fan of that.
Well, I appreciate that, of course. And I appreciate the clarification and enjoy talking to you.
Reed, great call, Reed. Very informative. Anything else?
No, thank you.
Have a good day. All right. So when I was a kid, Doc, my dad raised when we were growing up, he said that there was a time, my dad was a, I should say, was a, he was a manager of a business and he owned a business. When he had told us that when unions first occurred, they were very necessary and they did an important work. And later, they, in his opinion, they became corrupted. So I think there's a lot of people who feel like the unions were important in helping to establish safety and hours and everything.
And I agree with that. My grandfather worked for the Santa Fe Railroad, and in that capacity, I would contend, and knowing his history of employ with that entity, I think he was misused. I think he would have been a union guy if he had had the opportunity to do it. I think unions served a very good purpose at improving the conditions in the workplace, making wages reasonable, and curbing some of the abuses of large employers. I don't think there's any question, and we honor that. I think there is a degree to which unions may be overstepping those bounds into the area of influencing politics and perhaps in some cases asking for more than the market will bear.
The classic example is that the unions played hardball in Detroit to the point where the automakers kind of shrugged their shoulders and moved their plants overseas. I mean, if you are not going to accommodate the fact that, you know, the cost of building a car is half in Japan what it is here, or that we can do it in the next state or in the next country. But, you know, there was a lot of infiltration, I think, at some point. Gompers and some of these other famous union people, there was a question of whether they were socialist or Marxist. And I think that's, you know, that's a fair question.
Well, it's certainly true, Kelly, that they're playing hardball in my political campaign.
That's the important thing right now.
And others. I mean, they're playing hardball. And most of this money comes from outside New Mexico. There's no question about that, whether it be from teachers' unions or federal employee unions or whatever unions. And for God's sake, Michael Bloomberg has stuck money in against me in my little campaign for state representative New Mexico. You know, they're playing hardball, and they're trying to influence local politics. I wonder how your listeners feel about that.
Well, I'd like some calls, 523-1450. I want to throw out one other thing, though. There was a movement, a political and intellectual political movement that is still really not dead, but had its heyday a while back, called syndicalism, in which a country would be taken over by unions and run as a kind of a union, which might sound bizarre, but a variation of socialism.
Not familiar with that, but you can teach me.
All right. Okay. So anyway, we have the brilliant and modest Dr. McMillan here, and talking a little bit about these scurrilous ads that are coming out. I don't care a hard-hitting ad, but an ad with false information, that bothers me.
Well, and parts of the ads that you all have heard are absolutely false. Parts of these ads are absolutely false. And I want to take the time just once again, Kelly, and I appreciate the opportunity. There are a couple of accusations in the ads. One that that I had a lawsuit recently. It is true that I settled a lawsuit that arose out of events occurring 10 years ago. I operated on a child. You know, in my specialty, we operate on children every day. And it is true that I had a very unfortunate complication in this young teenager's surgery. But in my contention, things came out all right. And the assertion that it was unnecessary is false. Secondly, I also mentioned that the accusation that I'm under investigation by the Attorney General's office, this accusation arose out of a disgruntled employee who I let go, who got back at me, or attempted to get back at me, by filing a claim with the Attorney General's office that I was perpetrating Medicaid fraud. The AG's office did its due diligence, asked for 80 of my charts, reviewed those, and it's been almost 2 years that I haven't heard anything from them. So again, if that's being under investigation, then I guess it's true. I have nothing that I feel guilty or bad about. I acted properly in all of the, in every respect with respect to my charges.
Well, we're with Dr. McMillan. He's running for, and what is your what's your area that you're running in?
I'm state representative in District 37, House District 37.
We'll be right back. 718 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523-1450 to call in with Dr. McMillan, state rep. We'll be right back. and having a lively discussion off the air with Dr. McMillan. I've got to ask you to repeat that. When you work cattle, what do you do?
Well, we were off the air. And let me start by giving a shout out to my wife, Jody. Jody, if you're still listening, hang in there, sweetheart. This too shall pass. And this has been hard on my wife and family, Kelly. So I give
her
a shout out.
Well, when I think about that. I think about Trump, who is, it's not like he came into the race lily white, but I never saw him, still don't see him as a sexual predator. This lady, Hillary Clinton, was married to America's number one sexual predator. And yet Trump is the one who's getting attacked for it. It's brilliant how they turned it around on him.
Well, it is, if you consider that type of thing. I would call it cunning. You call it brilliant. I would call it cunning. But we were talking earlier about why I got into this. And one of the things that I use as a metaphor is in my growing up years, I grew up on the east side of the state of New Mexico in a very small community. Port Sumner in Dubuque County, and among other things that we did to make a living there, we raised cattle, and every spring we worked cattle.
Did you also have a whiskey still or something? What do you mean other ways of making
money? Oh, we farmed, we ranched, my father taught school, we did a number of
things. Sounds like a fantastic childhood.
Yeah, it was.
A lot of hard work.
Maybe it was a little idyllic, but it was great.
And, how many cattle?
Not many, 60, 70. Depending on the year. So we in the spring worked cattle. And the way you work cattle, Kelly, if you don't know it, and many who have understand this, the primary strategy behind working cattle is to systematically herd them into smaller and smaller confined spaces until in the end you will have them lined up single file in a little confined space. And when that gets small enough, you can have your way with them. And you can do what you need to do to them. Some years ago, I began to have the feeling and began to feel a sense of claustrophobia. I began to chafe, and I looked around and felt and experienced the sensation that we are being herded into narrower and narrower confined spaces. And to what end is not perfectly clear to me. But my decision to run had very much to do with my determination to turn around and head to more open spaces again. I think that our freedom of speech, our freedom of religion, our Second Amendment rights are all being eroded. And I oppose that. And that's the primary reason I do this is because of that feeling. I'm very concerned at my core about the direction that things are going in.
Well, if the government increases its authority and power over people and individuals have less choices, does the society get better or worse?
Well, that's a good question. I would argue that it's certainly less free. And what I feel and what I chafe under is the increasing sense of confinement. That I think if everybody looks around and considers it, that we are experiencing, we are being increasingly confined. We're increasingly told what we can and cannot say, what we can and cannot do. It is only becoming more confined.
Okay, 7:25 with Dr. McMillan, a very interesting conversation on what motivated him to run in the first place. You have these notorious ads out there, and it's really sad. You see at the highest level, whatever it takes to win is what they're going to do because they're going for it. If you're a far leftist, the only thing that there is politics. There's no life afterwards. You're fighting to save the planet from cooking to death, and you're fighting to save for all of the ignorant people to force them like cattle into doing the right thing. 7:26, Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, 523-1450. We'll be right back with Dr. McMillan. It's 7:30 on the button, and we have with us here Dr. McMillan. Dr. McMillan, I hear that George Soros, of all people, is investing in the Albuquerque DA's race, and now we know, find out that Michael Bloomberg, who's a wannabe George Soros, is investing in our state legislature. What's going on here?
Well, does that strike you as strange? Does it strike anybody out there as strange that billionaires from other parts of the planet and who can toss around this type of money at a whim are so interested in influencing your local political races and are willing to do so, you know, quite honestly, by destroying people or attempting to personally destroy the candidates of the opposition? So it to me, when it would suggest that to them that to them the means the ends justify the means. That is, they're so convicted that they're right, and so convicted that they need to impose their values, New York values or whatever values, on local voters, that they will invest money in it. So it's and if it works, it's a little frightening.
Well, I mean, if you have an unlimited amount of money, you could probably win any race, because you could just drown everybody in propaganda. But it is sad, and I've never understood why the United States as a whole has allowed George Soros, who's a foreign-born, he might be a citizen, but he's you know, lives internationally, to take his billions and come in and try to upend the democracy, because that's the transparent goal of socialism, is to remove democracy, real democracy and real representative republicanism from the society.
Right. The political process, the integrity of the political process, I believe, is being usurped. Some of this process comes out of the McCain-Feingold legislation of some years past. So that these political action committees became the way to invest, and especially the not-for-profit organizations around the country. And there are organizations on both sides of it. The not-for-profits can hide their contributors and yet can still participate actively in this type of politics. Individuals like Soros or others, billionaires, can participate behind the scenes in influencing people simply because of the amount of money they have.
And so it's important, I think, that we have a doctor somewhere in the legislature in New Mexico. We see here's another disaster. We were lied to about Obamacare over and over and over again by the president and by other people. And then the architect admits that they had to lie to get it, people to accept it. There's never any cost to these politicians that lie. And now it's failing across the country. We need somebody in the legislature to understand what's going on.
Well, I would agree. I think there is value to having a position in the New Mexico House of Representatives. And when it comes to healthcare-related issues, I do have some influence, and rightly so. And in other areas of life experience that we deal with in the legislature, I'm very interested in what other people have to say who have much more experience in those areas than I do. But I am the only healthcare provider in the legislature. And when it comes to issues surrounding access to healthcare and how we're going to meet those needs, I have influence, and I've passed legislation to that end.
What legislation?
Well, we talked last week about I would say the most important piece of legislation was House Bill 270, which allows New Mexicans to continue to access health care outside of New Mexico. We talked about how many New Mexicans go outside New Mexico because they want to or they need to get the type of special or specific advanced care that they may need or desire. Our appeals court in New Mexico ruled a couple of years ago that New Mexicans could go to Texas, Arizona, wherever, get health care, and then come back here to New Mexico and sue those providers. Now, the problem with that is those providers are going to stop seeing us. Their policies, their malpractice policies, both as hospitals and individual providers, are not going to cover for that. So my bill, House Bill 270, after a long fight in the Judiciary Committee and the Senate side, allows New Mexicans to continue to access health care outside New Mexico until we hear from our Supreme Court.
All right. There was something else that came up in one of those ads that you were associated with a hospital in which there was some fraud in pacemakers. I happen to know all about this case from somebody on the inside, but do you want to respond to that?
Well, the truth is I don't know about that case, except to say this. I'm not a shareholder in that hospital and never have been. I do remember the rumors and allegations against a particular physician who lived in the community several years ago that he was improperly implanting pacemakers. But I had no idea, quite honestly, that any judgment had been rendered against a hospital or a claim even made. And certainly I'm not an investor in that hospital.
But he didn't work for you. You didn't work for him. You were not involved with that.
Not at all. It's absolutely untrue.
Well, it's got to be so discouraging. You're running a local race in internet, you know, I guess national, international money coming in, some from union sources and others from Michael Bloomberg, who recently said he wanted to move to England and become a member of parliament and possibly the prime minister of England, which I found to be a bizarre idea. And he's now trying to upend a small local race in a small state.
Isn't that odd?
Weird.
Is anybody out there bothered by this? I mean, I put the question out there again.
523 1450.
Our local politics has been heavily influenced by large outside cash reserves from people who don't know us and have no scruples about who they will damage in the process of trying to pursue their political aims.
I believe that George Soros is getting involved because, although George Soros lives in New York, has an apartment in over Fifth Avenue, I think. He has long been a critic of republicanism and popular democracy. He was involved with the Nazis as a lad, as a teenager, and even though he's Jewish, and he seems to have a diabolical interest in communism.
Kelly, I can't speak to that. Maybe that's true. But you remember that we talked just a while ago about being herded into narrower and narrower confines. And maybe he does. And maybe that is his ultimate aim.
Well, we in America tend to give people the benefit of the doubt, but I just don't understand somebody who helps the Nazis capture his own people and steal their stuff. But here we've got a phone call. He admitted, he said that was the best time of his life, by the way, when he was a kid. Back there in Eastern Germany. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Donna.
Good morning, Donna. How you doing?
Fine, thank you. I can speak to George Soros. He has donated $33 million to the Black Lives Matter campaign. And if you look at the Black Lives Matter signs at the bottom, they say revcom.us. That stands for Revolutionary Communist Party. Anything that George Soros does is influenced, by and for the communists, and we should have nothing to do with anybody that he supports. And I totally support Dr. McMillan for the state legislature.
Thank you.
Thank you.
Anything else?
That's all.
All right. So, by the way, it just reminds me the protest that there was a question as why there was a shooting in North Carolina, and then there was a shooting, was it in outside of Kansas City? And one was violent, the other one wasn't. And people were trying to figure out why one became violent. The one in North Carolina that became violent was seated and infiltrated. That community was seeded with Soros money and infiltrated by Soros people. Now, the media did not report on that, but if not for George Soros, there would not have been the riots going on there. So that's the kind of thing that he wants. A true socialist wants to see a revolution, because that's the way they understand that the average person wants capitalism. They want freedom. They want control over their own lives, and they're not interested in the government telling them what to do. And Hillary Clinton is up to her neck with George Soros as well. We'll take a break here. 740, Kelly O'Connell, AM, Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450 on KOBE. And we have Dr. McMillan here. We'll be right back. It's Kelly here, and we have Dr. McMillan, and we were talking about a couple of things. Number one was the reason that he got into politics, which was, I guess, kind of a traditional conservative view on the importance of freedom and capitalism and some representation on that. And we were also talking about these ads that came out, and you know, I've shared this story before, but this lady that he's running against came to my house, knocked on my door, invited her on my show. I just want to tell the story because I think it's so illustrative. I say, come on my show. I never hear back from her. She comes back to my door, and I think both times she called me Fred. She's, you know, reading off this list. And I said, oh, yeah, I'm the guy. I'm not Fred. I'm Kelly. You know, you need to update your list. And I invited you on the show. And I found this to be incredible. She said that, well, my campaign manager didn't think you'd be fair to me. And I would never vote for somebody who couldn't remember that there was one person in town who had a radio show and it just happened to be in their district and came back. I mean, her mind can't even remember one thing. So, I mean, that to me is not I just found it disrespectful. I found it rude. I found it bizarre. I mean, if your campaign manager does your thinking for you, you couldn't even turn on the radio once and listen what's on the show. It's just absurd. So, and this person is running every cycle. I mean, I don't understand this like diabolical need to get into office to either get something done that can't be translated to the populace as being important enough to elect you in race after race, or because you don't exist unless you're in public office. Anyway, that's my rant. But anyway, doctor, so...
Well, let me, I may have an opportunity to say something, I would just like to encourage everybody, and we, you know, voters are encouraged to focus on issues time and time again. And so there are distinct policy differences between my opponent and I, and I would ask the voters to focus on those. First of all, I would suggest, and it's a fact that I'm a proven... a legislator. I had four bills passed in the last legislative session and signed by the governor, all of them affecting access to and the quality of the health care that my constituents have access to. I've always been an effective legislator. I do not have an agenda, a political agenda. I go there with a problem solving, from a problem solving frame of mind. I certainly do promote and vote for the preservation of our constitutional freedoms. That's very important to me. With respect to policy, I have supported, we recently have had a wave of crime in New Mexico, including the killing of police officers. I have supported just recently, in the short legislative session, I supported beefing up our three strikes law so that those who have been convicted of three felonies go away for life. These are the ones that perpetrate these types of ugly crimes against our children and police officers. In addition, I supported a bill that would allow district attorneys to bring back the possibility of capital punishment for those who have killed a police officer or a child or a jail guard. These are the most vulnerable among us. Now, my opponent would oppose all of this. We recently were able to balance our budget without raising taxes after a very difficult fight. We've made a lot of gains in your legislature in recent years, which I've supported, which have gradually made things better for business. We can't give those back. My opponent loves to tax.
We do need to build up business here, especially as a lot of the local politicians say we're a no-growth zone. That's terrible. We've got a phone call here. Thanks for the call. The Kelly O'Connell Show. Who's this?
This is Valerie Quick. I have been trying to convince one of my girlfriends to vote for Mr.
McMillan, and she keeps questioning his attendance record. Can you expound on that? What is she so upset about?
I can. This is an issue that's been by my and I appreciate your support. I appreciate it very much. But my has no record to stand on. And so she stands on my record. I attend every legislative session, and I've missed very few votes during the legislative session. There are in our legislature a number of what we call interim committees. These are the committees that meet around the state and take up certain terms before them, but they take no binding votes. Early in my legislative service, I was a member of and attended the Health and Human Services Interim Committee. I attended that session. I found it to be long-winded and accomplished little, if anything. Furthermore, I think these interim committees are not uncommonly abused by legislators who are not members of those committees and who get. So she's attending my attendance at interim committee meetings. And I don't flinch from that. We debated this before the editorial board at the Sun News. There are a handful of these committees that are worth. But our interim committee structure needs to be reformed. As far as being there during the sessions, I'm always there and always voting. Go ahead.
Oh, thank you. Let me give her some information then, because, yeah.
Thank you, ma'am.
A little left-leaning, to say the least. Okay.
Thanks, ma'am. Okay, bye-bye. All right, so we got about, we'll take a break here. We got a couple of minutes left, and I'll let the doctor expound. But we are fighting for something bigger in this country, ultimately, beyond the Donald Trumps and the Hillary Clintons, as flawed as they may be. We're fighting for liberty. And once you lose liberty, I don't know of states in history that then suddenly regain it. The move toward tyranny tends to be permanent. 751 Kelly O'Connell, AM Las Cruces, AM 1450, 523, 1450. On KOBE with Dr. McMillan. We'll be back to finish her up. It's Kelly.
Kelly, I don't want this on the
it's
air.
Kelly?
I have a letter from Lawyer.
It's Kelly. Who's this?
This is Ralph.
It's Kelly. Hold on. It's Kelly. Can you hear me?
Yes. I don't want to be on the air.
Hello? Hello?
Yes, this is Ralph. I do not want to be on the air.
Okay. What's your point?
I have a letter that I received. I've had my triple bypass and five stents regarding cardiovascular surgery for Memorial and Mountain View, where you have 1,000% more chances of getting unnecessary surgery, and if you want to take with the lawyers, they will represent
you. I'm back on the air, Ralph. Thanks for the call.
Okay.
All right, so Dr. McMillan, just a couple minutes left here. When people go to the booth, what do you want them to think about? What's important? And what's in this election that's important?
Think about the issues, Kelly. You know, what's important, I think, that's really right on our plate as New Mexicans is how we're going to handle the looming financial difficulties that are in front of us. We don't have enough money to pay for the things that we've been paying for in recent years.
$14,000 a day for a ghost fleet of buses that has no ridership.
Well, it's and at the state level. The fact is that we're going to have to make careful considerations about what we're going to do going forward and paying for state government. The oil and gas industry is on its back. We don't have those monies. In the foreseeable future, it won't be coming back. And we have made investment in the state legislature in our business community in trying to provide incentives for business growth and transplantation of businesses to our state so that we can get over this generational problem with a very poor private economy in this state. We're going to need to tackle this with our heads on our shoulders, tighten our belts, and be willing to make some sacrifices so that we can prosper for the long term. That's what's right on our plate, our financial difficulties right now. And I hope the voters will keep that in mind as they go to vote. Consider all the policy issues that separate the candidates rather than a lot of the very ugly marketing that's and personal destructive ads that are paid for by outside interests.
Well, we've got $100,000 in Albuquerque from George Soros, and he gave, they've just found out from WikiLeaks, $650,000 to Black Lives Matter, which is causing riots. Dr. McMillan and Andy Nunez has also been on recently, have had $250,000 placed into an ad campaign from back east to topple the Republican leadership in this state. I mean, it's just crazy.
Well, I think it is. And I just hope that the voters will keep their heads about this. And really, more than keep your heads, understand that your politics is being taken over. Understand behind the scenes that your decision-making process is being dominated by who gets information out to you. What does that information look like? Is it policy-related, or is it simply personal, ugly attacks? I know people will weigh this stuff. And we're fighting back in my campaign. You're going to be hearing some radio ads from me, or actually from patients of mine and from friends of mine, fighting back against these ads and how angry I think most voters should be about this approach to our local politics and our own local decision making.
Absolutely. Well, Doctor, thanks for coming on again and helping clear up the record and also letting people know what you care about. And I thought it was interesting in an unguarded moment off the air, you talked about the need for freedom and liberty and economic prosperity and how you feel right now we're being herded like cattle down chutes into tight compartments where other people will decide our personal decisions.
Absolutely. And I hope that people will, to a degree, understand that. That's what motivates me. And I hope that people look around and start to get the same claustrophobic feelings, like things are being done that are intended to narrow your freedoms, your choices. I think we should head back to more wide open spaces, Kelly.
The support of the Constitution, the support of the Bill of Rights, the support of the Founding Fathers' vision. Let's move in that direction, folks. We don't need a team of clowns. There's been a menacing clowns across the United States that have been seen recently that I think symbolize this attack of leftism, and just going to leave carnage and a chaos in its wake. But anyway, thanks for tuning in today. And we're going to get into the history of Marxism, the history of leftism, but mostly in the coming days, I'm going to try to get into Marxist tactics, leftist tactics, including money from George Soros and other people to discredit people in races that they don't know anything about and really don't care anything about. They don't care about New Mexico except they want leftist leadership, and they'd like to see a revolution across the United States against the will of the people. Thanks for tuning in AM Las Cruces, AM 1450. It is about 7:59, and I'll take you out with a little bit of Dave Brubeck. Take Five, one of the possibly the most famous jazz tune in the history of America. We'll see you back in 22 hours. Ciao.